This is KYUK Public Radio for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I'm Christy Schallenberger. Bethel is now much closer to filling the top positions in the city's administration. Last night, the city council interviewed two candidates for two positions and unanimously voted to offer contracts to both of them. This decision came after in-person interviews with Vincenzo, Vinny, Carrazza for city manager, and Elizabeth, Libby, Bacalar for city attorney. Vinny Carrazza currently works as the city engineer for Temple Terrace, Florida, and he has also served a year as city administrator for the North Slope Village of New Ixit. Councilmember Mark Springer made the motion to offer Carrazza the contract.
He has got some breadth of experience that we've never seen in a city manager candidate before.
Springer noted that Carrazza was a trained mechanical engineer and that he had project management experience and rural Alaska experience. Libby Bacalar served 12 years as an attorney in the State Department of Law, where she became a senior assistant attorney general. Councilmember Alyssa Leary says she had been impressed during the council's interviews with Bacalar.
I think probably the best candidate we will ever get, the most experience and, you know, a wide variety of experience.
Leary says the only drawback on Bacalar is the fact that she would not live in Bethel and would work remotely. City Clerk Lori Strickler says council's decision to offer Carrazza and Bacalar contracts only begins the negotiation process. The salary that they will be offered is not yet publicly disclosed, and the day they would start has not been agreed upon. Tune in tonight at 6:30 p.m. to hear Bethel City Council members recognize Acting City Manager Bill Howell as Bethel's Employee of the Year. Also on the agenda is appointing a new commission member to the Public Works Committee and a presentation of water and sewer expenditures from July 2019 to the end of January 2020. Again, tune into 6:40 a.m. tonight at 6:30 p.m. for the Bethel City Council meeting. And the Kuskokwim Corporation, which represents 10 villages in the Middle Kuskokwim River area, has a new CEO. Andrea Gusty grew up in one of those villages, Aniak, and she spoke to KYUK about how she hopes to reduce the cost of living in those communities in her new role. It's Andrea Gusty's first day as CEO and president of the Kuskokwim Corporation, and she's already been in the office since 8 a.m.
I do have only about 20 minutes. I apologize.
Gusty is familiar with juggling demands as a working mother of two young sons and her TKC duties. She's worked there 6 years, filling many roles like community relations manager and lands manager, all the way to vice president. Then longtime CEO Maver Carey retired in 2019, and Gusty split executive duties with Samuel Boyle. TKC makes its money from its subsidiaries and federal contracting, as well as money shared from the regional Native corporations through the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Gusty says Carey grew the corporation during her time as CEO.
Maver Carey brought TKC from a, you know, couple million dollar company to well over $100 million. And those are big shoes to fill.
There aren't many women leading companies nationwide, but in the YK Delta, Alaska Native women have a history of leading big organizations. Vivian Corthius leads the Tribal Consortium, the Association of Village Council Presidents, which provides social services for 56 tribes. Anna Hoffman heads the Bethel Native Corporation in the region's hub town and is a co-chair at the Alaska Federation of Natives. Former TKC CEO Maver Carey held that role for 16 years. Andrea Gusty, who is Yupik and Athabascan, hopes to carry on that legacy.
I think women are uniquely positioned to multitask and to have a lot of balls up in the air at once with families and work life. And I think that that is very beneficial for the leader of a corporation to have that background.
Gusty now lives in Anchorage, where TKC is based, but she grew up in Aniak, a village in the Middle Kuskokwim River area. She began her career as an investigative reporter and anchor for Alaska TV station KTVA, then worked as Senator Lisa Murkowski's Alaska Communications Director before joining the Village Corporation, where she worked her way up to her new position.
If we can help people stay in our communities because we've helped lower the cost of living, we've helped lower energy costs, and they can focus on that subsistence way of life and raising their families on the land as we have for generations, we want to do that.
TKC has some projects in the works to do just that. A year ago, TKC opened Gweek Run, a general store in Gusty's hometown, to help bring down the cost of food.
We're not looking to lose money at the store. We're looking to break even. So when I say we don't want to make a penny, we don't. We just want to be able to cover this in the long term.
If successful, Gusty hopes TKC can open more stores. Gusty says that a gallon of fresh milk now costs a little over $6 at the store instead of $10 for only half a gallon. And then there's the Brighter Futures Initiative.
And we brought 10,000 LED light bulbs to our region. We replaced the light bulbs in every single shareholder home in our 10 villages.
Water projects are another focus. TKC is planning water projects for Sleep Mute and Crooked Creek to make sure these communities have running water. But the details have yet to be released. TKC says they're using their profits to help cover the cost of these projects and initiatives. Gusty says they are hoping to discuss these projects and more at TKC's community meeting in Aniak in March. And never trust a fox. Last week, four boys from Newnam Ikwa left their home by snow machine during a winter storm and ended up lost 18 miles south of town. They weathered the storm for over 24 hours outside until searchers found them huddled together in the snow. KYUK's Greg Kim talked to one of the boys recovering from hypothermia, who says the kids got lost chasing a fox.
Laying on his hospital bed, 7-year-old Ethan Camille looks down at his hands, 9 of his fingers wrapped in bandages.
I only remember a little bit because the weather make me forget a little bit things.
His mother, Irene Camille, sits next to him. She's also the grandmother of the 3 other boys who were lost. Her memory of that day is clear, the day her son and grandsons left home and didn't return.
That day was supposed to be a good day. It was my birthday.
But both Irene and Ethan said the weather looked ugly that day.
Bad. A storm.
Ethan turns to his mom.
How can we just go outside?
Irene sighs. She's been asked that question a lot since that day. Part of the reason, she says, is the boys had been staring at their phones all morning.
We don't like them to be on their phones too much. We like them to exercise and play in the snow and have fun outside.
And so she took away their phones and sent them out. She checked outside her window every now and then to make sure she could see them.
Then they just disappeared.
Ethan says he and the boys had been riding their snow machine around town for 4 or 5 hours. Just as they were about to head back inside, something appeared that lured them away from home.
We found a real fox and we tried to catch it, but it ran away.
Ethan and the boys chased the fox until they eventually caught up and hit it with their snow machine.
We ran.
Thinking it was dead, Ethan jumped off to pick it up. But the fox wasn't dead.
That's why it bit me.
The fox bit Ethan twice. When it ran away, the boys continued to give it chase, driving miles and miles further away from town.
So that's how we got lost. Because we were trying to get the fox to show my mom. Their dad.
The fox disappeared into the storm's empty whiteness, which had worsened since they left home. That's when Ethan says the snow machine got stuck. 14-year-old Chris Johnson worked so hard to free the machine and pull the younger boys out of the deep snow that he suffered a hernia. Soon they ran out of gas and had no phone or compass. Still, the boys were determined to get home. They abandoned their vehicle and started trudging towards what they believed was Newnam Ikwa.
Ethan, how did you know which way to walk when you ran out of gas?
We didn't know.
At one point, Ethan stopped to go to the bathroom. As he took off his gloves, the wind snatched them out of his hand.
And I said, Chris, help me.
But neither boy could find the gloves. They were starting to lose their vision in the whiteness of the blizzard.
We almost got blinded. We almost got white eyes. White eyes.
After 4 miles of walking and no town in sight, Chris, the oldest, decided they should hunker down.
We tried to dig a hole, but it was too hard.
Inside the hole, Ethan says he was originally on top of 2-year-old Trey Camille, below the older boys. But afraid Trey would suffocate, Ethan joined the outer ring of the huddle, gloveless, so that the baby could breathe.
And I got tired, so I went to sleep, waked up here. That's all I can remember.
Irene said 8-year-old Frank Johnson was the only one who remained conscious through the night. She said Frank kept prodding the other boys, knowing that if they closed their eyes, they may not open them again.
The last couple of hours, I think I almost lost hope.
Miraculously, Herschel Sundown and searchers from Scammon Bay found the boys the next day around 4:25 p.m. In a few hours, the boys would have faced their second night outside.
It was like they were ready to go if we took a little longer, if we didn't find them any sooner.
Back in the hospital room, despite having 9 of his fingers bandaged, Ethan insists on trying to open a Coke bottle by himself. Irene says Ethan and the other boys will make a full recovery. And when they do, she says they can go right back out into the storm.
I'll never ever feel regret that they were outside in the storm. I'll always let them play out in the storm. That's where they were born. That's where they come from. That's where they're going to be. There's always going to be a storm.
Irene says, if you don't understand, that's because Nunam Ikwa is not your home. Reporting for KYUK in Bethel, I'm Greg Kim.
And finally, the river is so rough in the upper Kuskokwim area that it's impassable to vehicle and snow machine traffic. Big boulders of snow-covered ice are scattered across the river from Jawathbluk and up, but Mark Leary, who works for the village of Napaimut, hopes to clear the river so that people can travel this week. Leary says workers from Napaimut bulldoze the trail on the ice road between Jawathbluk and Napaimut to smooth it over before they plow it. High water during freeze-up, which was late this year, meant the ice road was nearly impassable for travelers coming from the upper Kuskokwim River area to the middle. Leary says Donlin Gold contributed $20,000 to help this latest effort. In a statement, Donlin Gold spokesperson Christina Woolston says, quote, supporting the extension of the Kuskokwim Ice Road can help connect more people together to and to critical services often restricted by air travel, unquote. This is KYUK News. Thanks for listening. I'm Christy Schallenberger. Send your tips and comments to news@kyuk.org and stay tuned for News Yukden coming up.